race is a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
First, the good news. Out of Georgia, holy cow. Early voting records absolutely shattered, and it's not even close. The first day of voting in Georgia, that was yesterday. In 2020, 136,000 ballots were cast. Yesterday, are you ready for this? 328,000 ballots. Again, so you don't have to hit rewind thinking you heard that wrong. 2020, 136,000 ballots cast on the first day of early voting in Georgia. Yesterday, 328,000. Folks, somebody has come out to vote like their life depends on it. But who? That looks like good news, too. Apparently, the record Georgia early voting yesterday was fueled by the whiter, more rural counties. And when you compare it to 2022, that was when Democrat Senator Raphael Warnock won election. Back then, 53% of the vote came from Democrat counties. Yesterday, it was 51%. Back in 2022, 46% of the vote came from GOP counties, and Warnock barely pulled it out. Yesterday, it was 48%. Warnock did win that election in 2022, 51.4% to 48.6%, but Herschel Walker was also a terrible candidate. Democrats are obviously aware of how close this is, and they're setting up for the steal in Georgia. The left just got a liberal judge to suspend a rule. This is ridiculous, folks. This summer, the Board of Elections in Georgia, the state one, was finally taken over by Republicans. And they immediately did two things. See, in Fulton County, Georgia, a blue county, there were thousands more votes cast in 2020 than there were actual ballots. What does that mean? Somebody, deliberately or otherwise, ran the same ballots through more than once. Which ballots? We'll never know. Were they for Trump? Were they for Biden? The numbers didn't match. They were off by thousands. So the new board voted to do two things. One, send observation teams to watch everything they do in Fulton County, which you got to do. They'll steal the thing right out of there. And on top of it, they decreed that there has to be a hand count so that the number of ballots matches the number of votes cast on the machine. Only then can the results be certified. Well, the left went absolutely wild about this, saying they were in living terror that that counting might go on for a couple of days or something. You know, better just to have thousands of fake votes. That's the best thing. What they're trying to do is force the old rules to essentially come back, which says, hey, even if the number of ballots is off from the number of votes by thousands, you're required to certify anyway. This is a near bulletproof way to stop at least one of the kinds of fraud. And relatively speaking, they don't have to do it much. Joe Biden won the state of Georgia by 11,000, and there were thousands of those double-scanned ballots in Fulton by itself. The liberal judge in that case says, well, we can't do that. I mean, the counting might drag on for days. We'll just have to accept all the fraud, is essentially the ruling. Which is really funny because this is the complete opposite of what we're being told by the Democrat Party in Pennsylvania. Folks, it's getting exponentially strange out there. Because in Pennsylvania, 60 Minutes this weekend argued it's going to take them probably at least 4 days to count the votes. And they forecast that this would lead to conspiracy theories, protests, and violence. Maybe even violence by Trump supporters. But they want you to know that sitting and waiting for 4 days to find out if Her Highness has won is totally normal. Why? Well, there's a law in Pennsylvania that says you cannot begin counting the absentee ballots until 7 a.m. the morning of the election. In their report, 60 Minutes takes their viewers inside a Philadelphia voting center where the director explains that if they could take a full minute to open an absentee ballot and take it out of the envelope. Folks, they think we're stupid. They're practically telegraphing their plan to steal Pennsylvania. That's what they're doing. It's called pre-bunking. And it normalizes the public to expect delays in the election. And it was quite frankly insulting.
Elections Administrator Karen Barsoom showed us how each ballot arrives inside two different envelopes.
94 ballots in one tray.
Processing them is a tedious task, which under Pennsylvania law cannot start until 7 a.m. on election day.
So when we do open it, there is another envelope. So hypothetically speaking, if we have 100,000 mail-in ballots, we have to deal with double the amount of envelopes, which is a long process. And then the ballots comes out.
And you can't count it folded like that?
Correct. We will need to have a whole different team unfold them, backfold them, to get the creases out as good as we can.
How long does it take to process each ballot?
Several minutes. It's not like done in a sec.
When I talked about this on my radio show this morning, my text line was flooded with people who'd worked everywhere from the post office to tax offices and boards of elections saying, no, there's machines for this. It's not that slow. Now, here's what's odd about this. This story ran at precisely the moment that one of the few pollsters that I trust, mainly because they poll likely voters, Rasmussen, came out with a poll showing for the first time in months, Donald Trump is ahead in Pennsylvania by just 1 point. So at the same time those results are coming back for Rasmussen, all of the sudden, the Democrats urgently need you to know via CBS News to expect to wait 4 days for an answer for how Pennsylvania voted. Long-term listeners to this podcast will remember the oddly specific way we heard things like this before the 2020 election, when I began ringing the alarm bell as early as August. Because remember, Facebook and Twitter were saying really weird things. Like putting out statements saying, hey, if anybody questioned the results of the election, then they would automatically be censored. Oh, and hey, it looks like it'll look like Trump won, but then Biden will win. So we're going to have to censor you if you question that. And I went, how the heck could you know that in August or September? This feels like that now. Back in 2020, the Washington Post also forecast, as if fact, in a tweet and also in an article, that once Trump's folks saw this delay where it looked like he was ahead, but then Biden would win, that we might resort to violence. And 60 Minutes using those same talking points as if fact over the weekend. Folks, there's other weird little things happening as well. You know how the left always accuses us of almost exactly what they're doing? Have you noticed what the left's been accusing us, specifically Trump, of in recent weeks with increasing fervor? Turning the military loose on our soil to go after his political enemies. They say he will do it. But is that what they're intending to do? Maybe in response to the so-called violence that's coming? I don't know, but a strange thing just happened. Just a few weeks ago, the Department of Defense quietly expanded the authority of the military to aid federal, state, and local law enforcement in quelling violence. And for the first time, the DOD was given the right to exercise the use of lethal force. The directive is called 5240.01. This updates a 2016 version of that directive that did not mention lethal force as a thing the military could do on our soil, but rather centered around the military being allowed to gather intelligence on our soil. This adds the military force component. It's on page 13 of the directive, and it says two things. Defense intelligence components, so that's the military, may provide personnel to assist federal department or agency, state or local law enforcement agency, when lives are in danger in response to a request for such assistance. And it goes on to add lethal force to the powers that they have. They can allegedly use the military in response to attacks, chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, high-yield explosive incidents, and civil disturbances. Here's the new part. Assistance in responding with assets with potential for lethality or any situation in which it is reasonably foreseeable that providing the requested assistance may involve the use of force that is likely to result in lethal force, including death or serious bodily injury. It also allows, by the way, for the provision or use of Department of Defense unmanned systems in the United States. Folks, the founders would be freaking out over this. Again, the newest version of this was signed September 27th. Why now? And if you're so concerned that Trump is going to unleash the military on our soil, why would you sign a new directive? Why would the administration sign a new directive allowing it to use lethal force on our soil for the first time? It doesn't make sense, does it? Unless they're just accusing him of what they intend to do. As a backup plan, maybe, for if he wins, or something else. Meanwhile, folks, you have the media going to new and unprecedented extremes to get Her Highness elected, and quite frankly, keep the wheels from flying off her campaign. Okay, there's a guy by the name of Dr. Stefan Weber. He's an internationally famous plagiarism hunter. He's taken about down a bunch of European politicians for plagiarism, and he took on Kamala Harris's book. How'd that go? Not so good. He did it in partnership with conservative investigative journalist Christopher Rufo. Together, they found 18 examples of plagiarism in Kamala Harris's 2012 book. It's a major scandal, especially considering that Joe Biden had to drop out of the presidential race almost 30 years ago for the very same thing, plagiarism. So the New York Times sprung into action. Went and found a guy by the name of Jonathan Bailey. He's a plagiarism consultant who lives in New Orleans, and he's the publisher of Plagiarism Today. And with his help, they wrote this ridiculous paragraph, one of the most ridiculous I've ever read in the New York Times, which is saying something, in which they admit, yeah, Her Highness might have plagiarized something, but it's not like big plagiarism. Quote, this amount of plagiarism amounts to an error and not an intent to defraud. Bailey said, adding that Mr. Rufo had taken relatively minor citation mistakes in a large amount of text and tried to make a big deal of it. Like, how many? Well, five. They showed Jonathan Bailey five. Wait, weren't there 18? Yeah. The reporters didn't show him the other 13. Oops. How'd he find out about them? Oh, where everybody goes to find out everything now, on X. And folks begin mobbing his account on X, pointing out to him the New York Times had gigged him. They hadn't shown him all of it. Did he care to take a look at it? Well, he did. It's all over Rufo's account. And he tweeted this. For those coming here from the New York Times article, I want to be clear that I have not, he puts in all caps, not performed a full analysis of the book. My quotes were based on information provided to me by the reporters and spoke only about those passages. In other words, the reporters didn't show him everything. So they lied. They cheated. And, you know, folks, the point of this is so that the mainstream media can say, oh, yeah, plagiarism, that's just misinformation. No, the only misinformation is the lie that the New York Times told Jonathan Bailey in order to get the quotes they needed. Meanwhile, Donald Trump walked into yet another hostile room, faced another hostile crowd, and completely dominated. He is totally on fire right now. He's on a roll. He's probably the best I've ever seen him, honestly. He seems to just be in his element, as he was sitting down with the liberal editor of Bloomberg, who was totally out to get him in front of a hostile audience. And by the end of the thing, you can clearly hear the audience was on his side. The subject, for a lot of it, was tariffs. Take a listen.
You're also talking about 20% tariffs on the rest of the world. That is going to have a serious effect on the overall economy. And yes, you're going to find some people who will gain from individual tariffs. The overall effect could be massive.
I agree it's going to have a massive effect, positive effect. It's going to be a positive, not a negative.
Let me give you an example.
How committed you are to this, and it must be hard for you to, you know, spend 25 years talking about tariffs as being negative, and then have somebody explain to you that you're totally wrong. It'll have a negative. It will have. I'll go 40, step further.
40
if
million,
you don't
40
do
million,
this,
President
this
Trump,
country
40 million,
has no
40
chance.
Million jobs is a lot of jobs to rely on.
They're
trade.
All coming back.
Those
You've
40
lost.
Million jobs. Those are 40 million jobs in America. That rely on trade.
Are you ready? John Deere, great company. They announced about a year ago they're going to build big plants outside of the United States, right? They're going to build them in Mexico.
And you threatened
they're
them
also
with tariffs
build
and they stopped.
That's right. I said, if John Deere builds those plants and not selling anything into the United States, they just announced yesterday they're probably not going to build the plants, okay? I kept the jobs here.
Okay, this is fascinating. This is truly leveling the playing field between foreign and American companies. American companies would be subject to the same tariffs foreign companies are if they try to manufacture outside the U.S. and want to run it back into the country. Ditto for if you're a Chinese or an Indonesian manufacturer. However, Trump's completely happy to let China, Indonesia, whoever compete They just got to have their manufacturing on U.S. soil if they want to escape the tariffs. Same for John Deere and other American companies. Trump also explained how he would use tariffs to prop up the dollar. Right now, as our enemies and several countries who used to be our allies before the Biden administration drop the dollar and put our entire lifestyle in mortal peril with zero response from the Biden administration. There's times I really think they want to crash the dollar and just get ahead, go on with the, you know, complete destruction. Donald Trump says tariffs would be useful there, too.
If a country tells me, Sarah, we like you very much, but we're going to no longer adhere to being in the reserve currency. We're not going to salute the dollar anymore. I'll say that's OK. And you're going to pay a 100% tariff on everything you sell into the United States. And we love your product. I hope you sell a lot of it into the United States, but you're going to pay 100% tariff. He will then follow it up by saying, sir, it would be an honor to stay with the reserve currency. That will be like just playing. That's not even chess, that's checkers. But you don't have other, listen to this, you don't have other people that can talk that way.
Finally, just one small glimpse of the hellscape we'll live in if Kamala Harris becomes president, provided to us from, of all places, CNN, specifically Andrew Kaczynski, the only reporter at CNN who seems to be allowed to report real things about Her Highness for some reason. Last week in Michigan, she said this.
Michigan, let us be clear. Contrary to what my opponent is suggesting, I will never tell you what kind of car you have to drive.
But that was kind of not what she was saying back in 2020.
Will everyone have to drive electric cars?
Well, by my plan, by 2045, we will have basically zero emission vehicles only, 100%.
Well, it's apparently worse than that. Back in 2019, while speaking in front of a crowd in South Carolina, CNN discovered, she promised to go after the oil companies criminally, using her Department of Justice. Folks, this is what authoritarians do. This is positively Soviets, total lawfare. Rather than build consensus and get a majority, do things like that, you're going to what? Resort to dragging, I guess, executives of oil companies before kangaroo courts in blue areas? Basically, it's the same template as they used on Donald Trump, but it's to destroy oil companies. Listen.
Will you order your Justice Department, your Attorney General, to investigate Chevron and Shell companies for their part and their damage to our planet in this climate crisis?
I will tell you what I've done, not just what I'm going to.
So, and then also going after the bad actors. Which means that I'm saying about these big oil companies and these fossil fuel companies, look, you should be really prepared to look at a serious fine and be charged with a crime. Because here's the thing. These big oil companies and these fossil fuel companies have been making so much money and profiting off of this pollution.
Now, CNN also correctly reported that the highest ever oil production has occurred under Biden-Harris, but that's only because the Trump administration preceded theirs, where Trump not only expedited these permits, he also executively slashed the bureaucratic process. Biden and Harris have been working to reverse that. And as Trump often says, oil production would be much higher than it is today had they left his policies, or really lack of policies, just getting the government out of the way, if they'd left that in place. But what's interesting is CNN admits in this piece that the process of going after the oil companies, suing them out of existence, using criminal statutes even, has already begun successfully under the Biden administration, including a $241 million settlement with Marathon Oil and a $40 million settlement with BP for air pollution charges. Folks, let me tell you what's going on here, okay? The left does not believe in climate change. Barack Obama wouldn't live at close to sea level in Martha's Vineyard if he did. They wouldn't jet around like they do in their jet. Remember when Kamala Harris stayed in her plane for an extra 45 minutes so she could hear Doug Emhoff's speech at the Democrat convention just circling around? She doesn't believe in climate change. What they want is electric vehicles for one reason. And they don't want hybrid ones either. They want something they can turn off at the source. They want something they can control at the source. If you even have a hybrid, you've got a shot in hell of putting gas in it and controlling your own destiny as far as movement. They get you into an EV, they got total control. Remember, these are the people who want kill switch.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.